I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Darren G., President and CEO. Please go ahead, Mr. G.
Thank you, Valerie, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us for our first quarter 2010 results conference call. With me in the room today is our Chief Operating Officer, Scott Robinson, our CFO, Kathy Turgeon, our VP of Land, Glenn Booth, and our Investor Awareness Rep, Jim Grant. Jim, I see you have some questions for us, so why don't I turn it over to you.
Okay. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of the investment businesses. So, Darren, despite significantly lower natural gas prices this year over last, our revenue, funds from operation, and payout ratio are very close to last year's first quarter. While our higher production is certainly part of this picture, what other contributing changes in Peyto and the landscape it occupies in the energy sector now versus the first quarter of 2009 would you like to highlight?
Well, Jim, I think, you know, definitely the financial numbers for the quarter don't look all that unique. Revenue, as you suggested, royalties, cash flow, distributions were all pretty close to the same as last Q1. But I think what's driving those numbers is really what's significant here in the first quarter of 2010. Realized gas prices are down, mostly because our hedging gains are less, and I guess that's to be expected as we work through some of the higher prices of the past. We're into some of the more recent gas prices. But production is growing, which is making up for that, and I think it really is that growth in production and the prospect for additional growth that changes the outlook for Peyto. We have a tremendous abundance of opportunities right now that we're very excited about as we move forward. And the timing, quite frankly, is perfectly aligned with our conversion back to a corporation.
Well, I'd like to direct a question to Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer. Scott, low operating costs have been a cornerstone of our operations and have enabled us to deliver positive cash flow and earnings during the low price cycle we saw last year and the low prices we're currently experiencing. What impact to our corporate operating cost level do you see with the increase in proportion of horizontal wells as compared to traditional vertical wells that make up our producing base right now?
Thanks, Jim. Obviously, we'd like to have some history, and given the newness of these horizontal wells, it's tough to answer that question with confidence. However, there is a strong prospect that our unit operating costs will decrease as horizontals become a growing part of our production mix. Consider that a single vertical well will bear the same fixed costs as a single horizontal well, yet the horizontal well produces at several multiples of a vertical well's production. For instance, right now we're enjoying a combined rate amongst our 12.2 net horizontal wells of over 400 barrels a day for each of those wells on average. A new vertical well might produce at 100 to 150 barrels a day, and our mature average vertical wells produce at 40 barrels a day. So you can see with that greater volume on a per well fixed cost basis, there's a real opportunity to see those costs be diluted over more volume. However, as we stated, we're early in the life of these horizontals, and we'll see over the next coming quarters the influence of those wells to our base operating costs.
Okay. So given that we've got an increasing percentage of our production being produced from horizontal wells, should we expect the same production decline behavior from these well types as compared to the traditional vertical wells? And as well, could you give us a breakdown on the proportions of the different marketable liquids produced by our horizontal versus our base of vertical wells?
Sure. Let's start with the first part of that question, and that's a good question. I'm sure people are curious about the decline aspects of the horizontals. Just consider our current base right now coming into 2010 without the new wells is about 17,000 barrels a day, and that carries with it an expected annual decline of about 22 to 24%. We've layered on top of that currently at present about 6,500 barrels a day of new production, which is comprised of horizontals at 4,800 barrels a day and vertical wells, which make up the rest of that production addition. And just as an aside, by the way, our present total horizontal well production is about 5,400 barrels a day as compared to with 48 of that being from this year's new wells. As is the case with any new wells, we don't have enough information really to conclude with confidence on the decline for that new well production wedge of 6,500 barrels. However, we can look at history, and the vertical well additions of previous years have showed a typical first-year decline of 45 to a high of 60%. And based on the engineering work that we've done, these horizontals, we would expect to be somewhere towards the high end of that that decline rate on a first-year basis. With regards to the liquid part of the question, first I'll provide a little bit of background. Our Q1 corporate liquid production was about 3,300 barrels, as shown in our report, which equates to a liquid-to-gas ratio of about 32 barrels per million cubic feet of sales gas. Of note is that these liquids are comprised of about 63% condensate, which is near equivalent and actually exceeds in recent market, exceeds oil price, 19% butane, which is running in the order of 57 to 60% oil price, and 18% propane, which is around the 50% mark of oil price. This, as you can see in our report, this blend delivered us an effective price of $69 per barrel. While that liquid volume of 3,300 barrels represents about 16% of our production, it provided a very meaningful 28% of our sales revenue. So the question would be, where will these horizontal wells take that liquid ratio, that 32 barrels per million? It's important to note that regardless of whether we drill a reservoir with a horizontal or a vertical well, the nature of the fluids don't change. A Cardium reservoir will continue to deliver about 50 to 100 barrels per million initially, declining to 35 barrels per million. And the other reservoirs that we're developing, the Notikewin and the Wilrich, will continue to deliver their 10 or so barrels per million. So really it comes down to the mix of horizontals that we pursue in the future. And if it matches anything like the mix that we drilled thus far, our liquid ratio that we expect to come about from our drilling will be very similar to that which we are currently delivered in our first quarter results.
Okay. Back to Darren. In this latest report, we have announced a further increase to our capital budget for 2010 by about $50 million, or 25%, than our previous guidance. We've started to ramp up our capital spending over the last two quarters, and it has made some obvious and substantial changes to our production rate. How effective is this capital spending? What more do we foresee doing with the $50 million we just added?
Well, Jim, I think, was it Q3 of 2009 report last year that we had highlighted the improvement in efficiencies that we were seeing, which is when we started to ramp up our capital. I put a table, I think, in that report that sort of compared the capital spent and the production that that capital had built. And what it showed was a significant improvement from years past, where the cost to build a new producing BOE, a barrel of oil equivalent, was now around sort of 15,000 to 20,000 per flowing barrel of oil equivalent, as opposed to say 30,000 to 50,000 a flowing BOE in the past. And I think this year, as we come into 2010, we've been able to continue adding at those improved efficiencies. In fact, I think we may even be getting better than what we had last year. So, you know, dollars per flowing BOE, it's kind of a wonky metric. It doesn't really give us a true indication of our returns. But considering that we're measuring it every year at the same time and for development of the same kind of reserves, I think we can use it as an early indicator of our profitability. So I guess what it is telling us is that we've maintained those same efficiencies moving forward. As to what we're going to do with the extra capital, I was led to believe we were going to drill some gas wells with it.
Yeah.
You know, really what the extra capital allows us to do is begin to test out some of the other formations that we might be able to develop with horizontal wells. We get to push out along trend in the Cardium and try the horizontals in some different rock along the Cardium trend. We get to participate in some land sales. You know, maybe there's even some acquisition opportunities for us that'll present themselves. So obviously, you know, those are going to have to compete with some of the organic drilling opportunities that we have in front of us. That's always challenging because these same organic opportunities are delivering some fantastic returns.
Okay. And Scott, the horizontal wells we've drilled thus far have demonstrated impressive multiples over our vertical well equivalents. As these horizontal wells mature, do we expect, what do we expect to happen to the ultimate recovery multiples compared to the verticals that we have in our production base?
Again, Jim, you know, it's early in the game to answer that question with a lot of confidence. We do see that the initial production rate multiples are on the order of 5 to 6 times that of a vertical well in the same reservoir and rock type. And as I previously stated, we expect these wells to decline at a steeper rate than a typical vertical well, and that's because of the near-term depletion in the interfrac region of these wellbores along the wellbore. Therefore, we would expect the reserve multiples, they won't directly correspond to the initial production rate multiples. Our independent reserve consultants have come up with estimates for ultimate recovery at this early stage, ranging on the order of 2.5 to 4 times the recovery that might be achieved for a comparable vertical well.
Okay.
An additional consideration, though, I think that's important to understand is that there's more to it than simply reserve recovery. These high initial rates do lend themselves to an increased present value of that reserve just by virtue of the upfront nature of the early recovery of the production. And because of that, we would expect these wells to have shorter payout durations than vertical wells.
Okay. Turning to Glenn Booth, our VP of Land, I have to ask how horizontal wells have changed the picture on our existing land position. Since our proven undeveloped and probable reserves have increased, do we have more potential locations on our existing properties?
Well, Jim, with the success of our horizontal drilling, there's no doubt it's magnified the importance of our existing land base. Not just the undeveloped lands, but also the developed lands. And I think as Scott has said a couple times already, today we can go back to sections and wells that we've drilled vertically, and if we so see fit, drill a horizontal well to accelerate that production. So that opportunity is available to us all the time. To date, we've actually looked at 3 different zones within the Cretaceous through horizontal drilling, and after breakup, we'll have an opportunity to unlock the success and potential in at least 2 additional zones in the Cretaceous. So I guess where I'm going with all this, you can see the combinations, the permutations of the various zones and all the lands that we own and control that provides us with a lot of exploitation and development drilling. It gives us the flexibility in the timing, in the net revenue interest, what we think would be the highest impact for us to drill these wells when we own and control them in and around our 100% owned infrastructure and facilities. So I really like the position that we've got. We're continuing to add to it with new deals, participation at land sales. I think the table's set. We're just waiting to get back in the field here after breakup.
Sounds good. Scott, it looks like our liquids increased in value substantially over this time last year. How significant are they as part of our revenue stream?
Jim, I hit on that a little bit on our previous questions. Liquids are about 16% of the production on that 6-to-1 BOE basis, and 28% of our revenue before hedging gains. It's interesting to note that the liquid or the revenue we derived from these liquids amounted to $21 million, which is about a match with all of our cash costs. They cover off in an entirety our costs inclusive of operating costs, transportation, royalties, bank interest, and G&A. So if you look at that from that interesting perspective, we're left with gas revenues that really have no cost. The liquids basically cover it all off.
Well, free is good. Scott, we have a major turnaround for our Sundance Old Man gas plant scheduled for the second quarter. I remember one 5 years ago that had a noticeable effect on production. Is this one going to be the same?
Yeah, 5 years ago, I think we were shut in for a little under a week in order to undertake a number of tasks related to monitoring our equipment, the maintenance of the equipment, and then pressure vessel safety. For this turnaround, we've got a preliminary plan that to minimize that outage time to about 1 to 2 days and without compromise to those important tasks that we need to undertake. If, in fact, we come in at that 1 to 2 days, the expected impact on our production would be about, on the average for the quarter, about 100 to 200 barrels a day, the cost of that that downtime.
Okay. And, you know, the production growth we've experienced over the last 2 quarters is really impressive. With our expanded capital program through the rest of this year, it's not hard to conceive that we may eclipse our historical highs for production. How are we positioned in terms of facility capacity to handle the prospect of significant additional production growth?
Well, we'll certainly welcome that prospect of dealing with facility capacity issues, and you know that will be because of the continued success of the program, which we are counting on and anticipating. We've already undertaken a number of planning and preparation steps on a number of fronts. For instance, at Nose Hill, as we commented, we added 10 million cubic feet a day of compression just in time, and we have recently filled that up with our quarter-end wells. As we resume our post-breakup drilling, we expect that we're going to double that Nose Hill capacity with some additional installations and have that up and running sometime in August or September to meet with the new well additions from post-breakup drilling. We also have work in progress for optimization at our other plants. Overall, we expect that we wouldn't really have any major processing impediments to meet those increases in production.
Okay. Now, I'd like to take a couple of questions to Kathy Turgeon, our VP of Finance and CFO. Kathy, despite a year-over-year drop of about 17% in our realized price for natural gas, our royalty costs seem to have gone up year-over-year. The new royalty regime is geared to have rates for lower commodity prices that are lower. How did the royalties actually manage to increase?
Well, Jim, royalties increased to $9.2 million from $8.3 million in Q1 of 2009. The increases in this gross dollar amount were caused by an increase in production and also by significant increases in oil and NGL prices, which caused an increase in the associated royalties. As a percentage of sales before hedging gains, though, royalties actually decreased slightly from 12.7% in Q1 2009 to 12.4% in this current quarter.
Okay. Now, Kathy, we speak about our conversion from Canadian GAAP accounting to IFRS in the MD&A that accompanies our first quarter financial report. Can you explain what IFRS is and why we are making this change?
IFRS is International Financial Reporting Standards, and we're making this change because the Canadian Accounting Standards Board has mandated that all publicly accountable enterprises in Canada make this change beginning on or after January 1, 2011. There has been and continues to be a worldwide effort to converge accounting standards to make financial statements more consistent and more comparable. Peyto's currently in the process of developing policies that are consistent with IFRS and determining the balance sheet impacts on adoption.
Okay. Now, Darren, the most common question I get asked from investors and people in the financial sector is what are our plans come 2011 when the taxation rules on flow-through entities changes and that the taxation of earnings moves into the hands of the business and no longer flows through to the investor?
Well, Jim, our plans are, I guess, as we've communicated, that we will be converting back to a corp at the end of the year. You know, I know this doesn't sound very innovative and probably comes as a disappointment to some of our investors, but unfortunately we don't really have any other choice. The federal government's determined to tax the distributions at source, and so we're better off as a corporation. It's the same conclusion, really, that all the other energy trusts have come to as well. So, you know, the best structure we really have available to us is a dividend-paying corporation, which, unfortunately, you know, it's not as tax efficient as the trust structure, except maybe for the fact that corporate taxes have come down a lot during the time that we've been a trust, which I guess that's nice. You know, the positive to all this, though, is that we now have a much larger inventory of investment opportunities in front of us. So from the unit holders' perspective, we have very high rate of return drilling ideas competing for those earnings. It's a great position to be in. Either the return comes in the form of a dividend or it comes in the form of growth in asset value per unit. It's that total return model, I guess, that we're really striving for. And, you know, I know everybody wants to know what level of dividends would we be looking at and what we might adopt. And really, it's just too early to say. We've never set our distribution policy that far out into the future because We need to see our results from the 2010 capital program. We need to see what gas prices are doing for 2011 before we can really decide on what level the dividend might be.
Okay. So what do you feel are the most significant opportunities available to Peyto at this time?
Most significant opportunity? You know, I guess in some ways the combination of these low gas prices and the lower levels of activity in Alberta right now they're driving less demand for services. It's allowing us to develop our assets at lower cost. Of course, the counter is we're bringing on flush production at lower prices. But, by drilling and proving up these opportunities, we can then add more of them. Land is cheap these days, so I would say the biggest opportunity for us really is on the organic drilling front. It's pretty hard to find any acquisitions or even farm-ins that compete with the returns that we can generate with our internally generated ideas. We look at the acquisition metrics still in the market today, and they've come down a lot, and there's a lot of product on the street, but reality is we're still beating those economics by a large margin with our organic work. And the funny thing with Peyto, the more we do, the more ideas we get. That's the Peyto strategy and the Peyto team at work.
Okay. Valerie, I'd like us to turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses.
Our first question from Sandy.
Hello? Yeah, this is Sandy Maytel with Value Investment Principles. Can you comment on what you think your effective tax rate or cash tax rate might be going forward? Is there a range that you expect it to be in? Do you have tax pools or any other carry forwards that might help to reduce taxes going forward? Thank you.
Thanks, Sandy, for your question. I'll take a stab, and maybe Kathy can jump in here, too. I wrote, actually, in my President's Monthly Report this last month, talking about corporate tax rates moving forward. Obviously, as a trust, we're not incurring any cash taxes, and we're flowing all of our income out to you, the unit holders. When we convert back to a corp, though, you're right, then it's back to straight old corporate tax rates, which in 2011, I think, are forecast for an Alberta corporation, both combined federal and provincial tax rates somewhere around that 26.5% mark, dropping, I think, to 25% in 2012. But, as a trust, for the last 6-7 years here, we've been building a tax pool base with our exploration and development activity. We were $676 million of pools at the end of 2009. We've got an aggressive capital program for 2010 that's going to build a lot more tax pools. And really, the retained capital that we're having to shelter is a lot smaller than that. So we'll come out the end of this year, in fact, with even greater tax pools than we ended up last year. I'd hazard a guess, probably somewhere $750 million or something like that. So, we've really, in some ways, benefited a lot from the trust structure because we've managed to accumulate this big base of tax pools, which will help us shelter our cash flow and our taxable income as we move forward as a corporation. And, it's not like we're stopping our capital programs either. Our capital programs are growing here, and so we're generating additional tax shelter with exploration and development activity as we move forward as a corporation. So with that big bulk of tax pools and the additional pools that we create as we move forward, it's going to be many years really before we're subject to cash taxes. Now, the thing that impacts that, of course, is commodity prices, right? And so the amount of taxable income that we generate every year, and if we have a spike in gas prices and generate a ton of revenue and cash flow in a certain year, then we burn through our pools a lot quicker. But, if you wanted to forecast with today's forward strip, it will be many years before we're subject to cash taxes.
When you say many years, is it something like, with today's commodity prices, something like 3 to 5 years that your current existing tax pools will help shelter you going forward? Thank you.
I think you would probably calculate with the pools we have at the end of this year that it would be 3 to 5 years if we generate no more pools, which the reality is we're going to be investing $200-300 million a year maybe in our capital program, and that's going to build a big block of pools. So, the fact is we're always adding to that same base that we're depleting, and it's probably going to be more than the 5 years. It's probably going to be pushed out beyond that. And with the trend in corporate tax rates, who knows what corporate tax rates will be by the time we actually are subject to those cash taxes. Hopefully they keep coming down, and so by the time we're subject, they're under 20%. Somehow I'm a little skeptical of that, but...
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your question, Sandy.
Next question is from Kurt Molnar from Thomas Wessel Partners. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Congratulations on the quarter. Darren, could you give us a little more clarity going forward as to the allocation of capital on a quarterly basis for the balance of 2010, if possible? And then, again, recognizing that we're in the early days on the horizontal wells, what kind of exit production rate might we see as a range of possibilities in that regard?
Thanks for the question, Kurt. You know, we've put together for this expanded capital program, Scott and the team have put together a new drilling schedule. I think it's got five rigs running, gets us into that range of 225 to 250. It's definitely heavily weighted towards, initially anyway, towards the horizontals. We're following up on the recent success of the 13 horizontals that we've built so far that have given us some pretty exciting results. So, I don't know, Scott, do you have a few well stats that...
Well, we're going to fire up the rigs here tomorrow, starting with two rigs and very quickly increasing to about five rigs. At that rate, we'll be burning about $30 million per month of capital. We'll tail it off in December, just consistent with previous years. So out of that, we'd expect to drill anywhere from 30 to 40 wells over the rest of the year, depending on the composition of vertical wells and horizontal wells, which we've still got some ranges on our targets on those parameters.
You were wondering about what kind of production that could build, Kurt. You know, we don't typically give production guidance just because, you know, timing obviously affects that, and with these long reserve life assets, a month here or there doesn't really affect our rate of returns. But that being said, you know, I think with the efficiencies that that we were talking about, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20,000 per flowing BOE, the metric that we measured against last year, and we think that we're doing that kind of efficiency this year or better, you can kind of back calculate with, you know, the capital that we do get invested, what sort of production number that should have ultimately yield, whether it yields at December 15th or January 15th, based on the timing of some tie-ins. Obviously, there's a variable there. But, you know, I think it'll be a significant wedge of new production that we will be building this year, 10 to 15,000 BOEs of new production, considering that we've got some plant expansions planned. You know, we should have the capacity for the production that we build this year. We shouldn't have to be restricted on any of it. It's effectively all going to go through our own facilities. We're not planning to put a lot of new production through third party or something where we would have capacity consideration. So we've got it within our control to bring on. You know, one of the considerations probably is gas prices. As you know, that we've got some soft gas prices going into the summer, and we want to see how those maybe firm up into the fall. Do we rate restrict some of this new production because of the soft gas prices? Do we want to expose, you know, a 5 million a day or greater flush natural gas well to $3 gas? You know, there's a lot of consideration there. Obviously, we want to know what these wells are capable of, and if you choke them back all the time, then you don't really know what they're capable of. But secondly, too, we've got the liquids production, which is generating a ton of revenue, as Scott discussed earlier in the call. And I think, you know, we got to look at liquids prices and look at how much revenue we can generate from some of this flush liquids production. And that may be the bigger driver in terms of whether we're producing at full capability or choking back.
Thanks very much, Chris.
Thanks, Kurt.
There are no further questions registered at this time. I would like to turn the meeting back over to you, Mr. G.
Okay, great. Well, hopefully Jim's list of questions answered most of everybody's question, and thanks for those who tuned in this morning to listen. It's, you know, it's been a very exciting quarter for us, and from Scott's comment here, we're up and running in the next couple of days with our drilling rigs. So, you know, new wells will start coming in probably about a month from now. That makes it exciting again around here as we start to look at these new well results and their impact and what that drives in terms of additional opportunities for us. You know, I'd encourage all our unit holders to check back on our website, track the progress of our capital program. I've got updated sort of production and capital spending as we go in that monthly report of mine. So if you want to hit that, you can see how we're doing there. And we'll report back to you next quarter in early August how everything's been going. Thanks again for tuning in.